Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW. The ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, hey! Happy Sunday! Or is it your Monday? I guess it depends upon where you are, who you are, and what you are doing. For me, it's still a Sunday night. I try to stay on West Coast time. It makes the shift easier, if you can imagine. And so as we come to the end of a Sunday and prepare to usher in a Monday, I am a little bit blown away by the fact that we are just 10 days from Christmas. Whoa! How? I don't know. But I do know that week 15 will always hold significance for me, not because of work, but because of personal. So this time last year, on week 15, Sunday, I didn't give one thought to football because I was getting married. I know. How could Amy Lawrence possibly take off an NFL Sunday in December, no less, not think about football for even 1 minute and walk down the aisle instead? But I did, and it was terrific. And now here we are. We're actually 2 days shy of our anniversary, which is Tuesday, but the Sunday itself, week 15 of the NFL season, as I say, will always be significant. So I have no idea what happened last year during week 15 of the season, but I do know what happened this year, and we are getting closer and closer to looking and understanding and seeing and processing the NFL playoff field. Now, we don't yet have the bracket. That'll probably take until the very last second of this regular season. But we do at least know that there are more teams who have punched their tickets to the postseason. It's not as neat and tidy as it is in baseball, by the way. In baseball, you can say they punched their ticket to October, or they'll be playing in October. Well, the postseason for the NFL starts in January, but closer to the middle of the month, so you can't really say that. It's not quite so neat and tidy. Here's what I know. We've got two more games coming up on Monday night. Did you notice that there are a lot more games on the schedule, a lot more action on this Sunday? Well, that's because all the buys are done, and so every last NFL team is in operation this weekend, going back to Thursday, of course. This was one heck of an NFL Sunday with some interesting trends in a few games where you had teams put themselves in holes early only to come roaring back and hold their opponents scoreless in the second half. We had a shootout of sorts. Now, it wasn't quite the same as Bills-Rams a week ago, but a hell of a lot of points between the Bills and the Lions, though I think the final score is not indicative of how the Bills controlled this game. The Lions were able to get their 42 points, but the Bills were in front. They had command, similar to the Rams last week against the Bills, where there were a couple of moments where Rams were able to establish themselves and stay in front in this one. But still, another game in which there are 90 points scored. How is that possible? It was more like a track meet. And yet it was entertaining. And in addition to the entertainment value, we get to know a little bit more about where the Bills are now and where the Lions are vulnerable. I think that was pretty evident. Major strategy against the Lions, and I would say probably the case against most high-powered offenses. But in the case of the Lions, the issue is their defense. They've lost so many pieces on their defense that the defense can be picked apart. And that's exactly what Josh Allen was able to do. He was able to knife through the heart of the defense, pick him apart with his passing, the balance between the pass and the run for the Bills, and him as a threat to run. The number of times that Tony Romo was pointing out, don't let Josh Allen get around to the right. Don't let Josh Allen out of the pocket. Don't let Josh scramble, especially not to the right. But Josh was able to do essentially whatever he wanted in this game. But a trend for the Bills that I'm not sure is one you can call a Super Bowl winning trend would be this. The Bills and the 1966 New York Giants, the only teams in NFL history to score 40 plus points and give up at least 40 points in back-to-back games. So great. You're able to score a lot. That's awesome. Throw a bunch of points on the board. But the defense also has given up at least 40 in two consecutive weeks. Is that a Super Bowl winning formula? We will find out, of course. Something to like if you're a Bills fan, though. And there were plenty of Bills fans in Detroit. Three games inside the AFC East. That's what remains for Buffalo. They've got the Patriots twice and the Jets one more time on their schedules. Those two teams combined don't have as many wins as Buffalo. So there's a real good chance, if Kansas City falters at all, that the Bills could end up with the number one seed in the AFC should they take care of business. They've won 8 of 9. They're now 11-3. And as I say, they've got Patriots, Jets, Patriots still on their schedule. Both of those teams officially eliminated from playoff contention. As for the Lions, they see their 11-game win streak come to an end. And now they've got competition with the Eagles for the top seed in the NFC. And so, as I say, we have a lot to get to. We're going to focus on these biggest games, the ones between Bills, Lions, Steelers, Eagles, huge game for the Buccaneers offense yet again. Baker Mayfield, first time in his NFL career, he's had at least 30 touchdown passes in a game. He and Mike Evans are locked in yet again, but what a stunner on the road in LA against a Chargers defense that had been largely stingy until the last month or so. And then how about the Denver Broncos roaring back against the Colts? Man, what a disastrous second half for Indianapolis in Denver. We're tracking the Chiefs as well, who moved to 13-1, but Patrick Mahomes does not finish this game because of what's being called a high ankle sprain. I heard that report later. That didn't come from the Chiefs, but the report has come out since, and you'll hear from him straight ahead. The Ravens are 9-5. The Texans are 9-5, and they win the NFC South for a second straight year. So let's go through really quickly what we know, and then we'll talk about Sunday Night Football. But the newest intel from the AFC is that, yes, the Texans lock up the AFC South. That's 2 years with D'Amico Ryans and two division titles. The Steelers clinch a playoff spot. Congratulations to Mike Tomlin. This is not just another year in which they don't have a losing record. It's far more than that. Though, we did see the Steelers defense get a bit exposed by the Eagles. Passing game. What? We haven't said that in a while. So you've got all, well, the Steelers haven't won the division title yet. On Christmas Day, if I'm not mistaken, Steelers and Ravens play Christmas Day, which is just odd. It's a Wednesday, but honestly, this is what the NFL wants, is to train us that every single day of the week can be an NFL game day. It's urban sprawl, I tell you. Greedy. They're so greedy. So the Steelers lock up a playoff spot, but the North Division title is still up for grabs. The other three AFC divisions have been secured. Bills, Texans, Chiefs. All right, moving to the NFC, where there's a lot less that's been settled. But we do have a couple more teams that are officially eliminated from playoff contention. The Bears, who play on Monday night, they've dropped 7 in a row. They're out. The Panthers officially eliminated. The Giants tie a franchise record with their 9th consecutive loss. They go 0-4 at home. Oh my gosh, 0-8 at home so far this season. But the Eagles have won 10 in a row, and they've got a game against the Commanders coming up next week. They did clinch a playoff spot, and we know the Lions were already in. And the Vikings, they play against the Bears on Monday night. They host the Bears on Monday night. That's huge, considering that the Detroit Lions finally take a step back. So if the Vikings win on Monday night, both those teams will be 12-2, along with the Eagles, who are 12-2. Woo, drama. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Hope you had a terrific weekend. Got lots of Christmas and holiday prep done. I know we spent a bunch of time kind of early celebrating our anniversary, but Christmas activity, for the first time in my life, I saw the entire performance of the Nutcracker. Oh, it was amazing. I'm not huge into ballet only because I'm not that graceful and cannot dance at all. But when it's performed well, it's phenomenal. And the music itself is iconic. And so we went to see the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra and the New Jersey Performance Ballet perform the Nutcracker. And it was stunning. And I think we were in row 6, too. So we were right there to be able to see it all. That was really cool. Lots of Christmas shopping and Christmas prep and to-do lists and shopping lists, too, just because we're starting our drive to Texas later in the week. And so we got a lot that we have to get done, including an oil change for Princess Leia, because that'll be super fun right before Christmas. I'm sure no one else has that idea. So I hope you had a good weekend. Hope it was productive. Glad to have you with us here as we start off yet another work week. So on Sunday Night Football, this is yet another game with major significance because the Seattle Seahawks had won 4 games in a row and were trying to take a step closer to the NFC West title. Keeping in mind the Rams are encroaching. It's supposed to be a flag, right? The Rams encroaching on their territory. And the Seahawks hosting the Packers in this one. We know the Packers' offense has been real good in stretches when they can start out the game on a high note. Right? Generally, and I'd have to go back and look to make sure it was like every game, but most, for the most part, when the Packers win, when the Packers look comfortable, it's because they came out of the locker room and right away found a rhythm, right away had a spark with the offense. And that's exactly what we saw in the first quarter of this game in Seattle.
10th play of the drive coming up. Love will line up under center. Dobbs is wide left. Wicks wide right. Wicks in short motion from that side. Love takes the snap. He's back. Handed off Jacobs up the middle. Into the end zone. Touchdown, Packers. Josh Jacobs caps off an impressive opening drive with a one-yard touchdown run. Packers now will go empty on second down and 8. Three receivers right, including Jacobs. Two to the left. Reed goes in motion from left to right. Shotgun snap. Love looks. Throws over the middle. Caught by Dobbs. Inside the 5. Driving into the end zone. Touchdown, Packers. Romeo Dobbs made the catch and took a defender for the ride.
Ryan Radke with the calls on the Westwood One Radio Network. So Josh Jacobs, early on, he was a beast. He was carving up the Seahawks defense. They were able to get to him over and over again, and he found holes, so had a lot of fun. I would say he was romping around in that first half. And then in the second half, a little more hobbled. Did have a fumble, too. But early on, they had Josh Jacobs. They had Romeo Dobbs out there. The way that he and Jordan Love were able to connect again, and it's like Dobbs hadn't been away at all. So yeah, they start out with a 14-0 lead by scoring on their first two possessions, and then before the half is over, they've tacked on a pair of field goals. 20 points in the first half for the Green Bay Packers, and they're leading at the break 20-3. We're going to talk about the Seahawks coming up here with our friend Greg Bell, who was at the stadium at Lumen Field. We'll try to get an update on what happened to Geno Smith.
Here's the snap. Smith rolling right, looking back left. Now throws it to the right, into the ground, incomplete. He had two men pressuring him right in his face, and now Smith gets up. He is fired up. He is screaming at Cleve Blakeman, the referee, and Geno is limping off the field. And now he's going to go down. Well, Smith was limping to the sideline. He got to the numbers, and he goes down. The training staff is going to look. He was really unhappy, screaming at Cleve Blakeman. He thought there should have been a flag.
You look at the video replay, and it honestly doesn't look that terrible, but Geno Smith was clearly in some pain, and he did not return, which meant that they had to move to a backup QB when they're already in a hole. So early in the third quarter, so early in the second half, they don't have their starting quarterback, who's been one of the best and steadiest in the NFL so far this season. I don't know the Packers were going to give up that lead, but I do know that it didn't get any easier for the Seahawks without Geno Smith. And man, Jordan Love and Romeo Dobbs, if you've not seen it, maybe we'll retweet it from our show account at Amy After Hours. The catch by Romeo in the second half. This is definitely a TD of the week candidate.
Love looks over the defense, takes the snap, he's back to pass. Love has time, bouncing in the pocket, lofts it deep down the middle of the field for the end zone. It is caught! Touchdown, Green Bay! Romeo Dobbs, his second of the night. Jordan Love with a moon ball down the middle, and Dobbs underneath the goalpost with a sliding catch. He picked it right off the top of the turf.
What a great description by Ryan Radke on Westwood One. He did exactly that. Somehow Dobbs is able to, well, he initially was supposed to set a pick on this play, a legal one, sort of. They're not always legal. He's supposed to set a pick and free up Christian Watson, which he does. And then he angles toward the post. And as he's getting toward the goalpost, he gets behind the defense, sinks to the ground as the moon ball is coming in, and snags that. Well, I guess he goes low. He didn't quite get on the ground, but snags that ball right off the turf. It was a tremendous catch that's worth watching in slow-mo. I kept saying, where's the replay? Where's the replay? I need to see this again. And so, yeah, it was a really impressive catch by Dobbs. More so, though, when you consider the injection of experience that he brings to that Packers offense. And so he ends up with a couple of touchdowns on just his 3 catches. But Jordan Love, terrific day, 20 of 27 for the 2 touchdowns. I don't want to say near perfect, but that start, having Josh Jacobs go for nearly 100 yards as well, made Jordan Love and the Packers offense really comfortable. Anything they can get from Josh is a big deal.
A lot of confidence, you know, especially when he's running the ball the way he is and coming up with some big games right there. I think when that guy's hot, you just want to keep giving him the ball and feeding him. And, I think just his ability to stay in there and, just take those hits and keep running the way he does. It's a special player for sure.
Our team effort, especially our defense. I thought they played a really good game, you know, for four quarters, got constant pressure on the quarterback, got a couple takeaways.
They did that. Matt LaFleur's defense able to pick off the Seahawks a couple of times and keep them from scoring inside the red zone. That's fairly lopsided. It was the way that the Packers started out. We're going to talk about this from Seattle's perspective because, believe it or not, the Rams have taken over the lead in the NFC West despite the work the Seahawks have done over the last month. And what's the latest on Geno Smith? So Greg Bell will join us straight ahead. At A-Law Radio is where you can find me online. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Just want to clarify, thank you for finding me on Twitter. The Steelers and the Ravens play next Sunday. So it's the Sunday game, and then they turn around and play the Chiefs on Christmas Day. So only 4 days in between those battles against first the Ravens and then the Chiefs. That is absolutely ridiculous and slightly unfair. I don't like teams playing on Wednesday. It makes no sense, except the NFL and its money grab. All right, glad to be with you. 855-212-4227. Coming up, we'll talk about the Seahawks, the NFC West, and we're just rolling on this first show of the work week here at After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Down six, Howell gets the shotgun snap. Going to hand it off to Charbonnet. Runs outside the right side numbers. Finds a lane. Down to the 15. Out to the sideline. 10. Charbonnet down the sideline to the end zone. Touchdown, Seahawks. Zach Charbonnet with a 24-yard touchdown run.
Our fans did a great job, so we appreciate them. So, but it stinks, you know. I thought, just in general, you got to give Green Bay a lot of credit. I thought they outcoached us. We didn't have a good enough plan in all three phases. I'm responsible for that. And then, frankly, we didn't play good enough.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Zach Charbonnet's touchdown may be a highlight for the Seahawks and their ground game. He's had a couple of strong performances in the last month. But as you hear from Mike McDonald, this really was a mess. And he said, I can't really highlight the players when we get beat that badly. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, Ryan Radke on Westwood One. And right now we head to Seattle and welcome Greg Bell, who's a Seahawks insider for the News Tribune. And Greg, this was a tough one for the Seahawks because of the loss, but more so, I would say, because of Geno Smith. What do we know about his injury?
Well, hi, Amy. Geno Smith had x-rays in the stadium, showed no structural damage readily apparent. They're going to give him an MRI tomorrow and see what the inside of the knee looks like. Mike McDonald said after the game he's not ready to comment at all about whether Smith can play next Sunday against Minnesota. So that puts Sam Howell, at least for now, squarely in the middle of Seattle's playoff run. He didn't do anything tonight, Sam Howell, that makes you think he's quarterback of the future or the present for Seattle. Of course, he wasn't prepared for this and had to be rushed in on no practice prep as a one all week. Tonight was his second, third, and all the way through the end of the game snaps. He only had one snap as a Seahawk, and that was when Smith went out for one play in Atlanta on October 20th. But, Amy, since Smith arrived in the trade from Washington, he has looked really scattered in his accuracy. He's been holding on to the ball quite a bit behind an offensive line is one of the league's worst. And that combined tonight is what you saw. Four sacks, the interception thrown straight to a linebacker, 4 for 15 passing for 24 yards. I know he didn't prep all week, but Geno Smith's knee is the story of whether the Seahawks can get off the deck against Minnesota next week.
As you point out, Geno's been terrific a good portion of this season, one of the top passers in the NFL, going 15 for 19 before he gets hurt. But he was also under siege, so the offensive line definitely in dire straits. But that doesn't explain the hot start for the Packers. What did you see in that first quarter?
Well, Amy, it was a lot like, no one mentioned this specifically after the game, but it reminded me of week two in New England when the Patriots didn't wait around for Mike McDonald to run his little tricks at the snap, change the looks, move around at the snap, and confuse offenses. They just got up to the line and snapped the ball. And Ramondre Stevenson and the Patriots ran for 185 yards that day. The Patriots ended up losing in overtime, but very well could have won that game. And I remember sitting in the press box in Foxborough and said, okay, that must be the way to beat McDonald's deception at the snap. Snap it before they're moving around and getting into position. And today in the first half, or excuse me, the first quarter, that's what was happening. Linemen were talking to linebackers. Ernest Jones was trying to traffic cop guys. Leonard Williams was walking up and down the line of scrimmage. And then the ball was snapped. And there were three or four guys out of position when the Packers were coming straight at him with Josh Jacobs. And I'm not quite sure why Jacobs didn't have 40 carries tonight, because he could have had 300 yards. After the first quarter, I went and had to start looking up how many yards Jacobs ran for as a Las Vegas Raider in 2019 here out in Seattle. He won that game with an 86-yard touchdown run in overtime. He had 229 in that game. And after the first two drives, he had 70. And I thought, well, he's going to get 300 yards tonight. And then they started throwing the ball more, and it wasn't quite just Josh Jacobs. But, Amy, in the first quarter, the Seahawks literally were not ready to play. Ernest Jones, after the game, said, we didn't have our feet planted in the ground. He meant literally. And he said, we were walking around at the snap. We were trying to do too much. And the Packers caught us trying to change. And I think, now, that's multiple teams that have done it to Seattle. When McDonald tries to get deception and amoebas and moving his linemen around and shifting, snap in a hurry. Don't change the play. Don't audible. Get under center and go, and you can catch the Seahawks out of position.
Whose fault is that, Greg?
Well, that's coaching, as Mike McDonald said. He's trying to do too much schematically. But the players don't know it well enough yet. Even at, here we are in almost the end of December, Amy, but it's still year one of this. And the numbers for Baltimore the first year that Mike McDonald was a defensive coordinator are really similar to the numbers here in Seattle. The first half of 2022, Ravens fans will remember, the Ravens were giving up tons of points. They were in the bottom third of the league in yards allowed. They were like 28th in scoring defense. And then in week nine, they trade for Roquan Smith from the Bears. He gets his middle linebacker. McDonald won it in Baltimore. And they took off to the top of the league in points allowed, yards allowed. This year's Roquan Smith for Mike McDonald is the new middle linebacker, Ernest Jones, who they traded for from Tennessee, the former Rams Super Bowl middle linebacker. They traded for him in October, mid-October, and after that time, the Seahawks defense rose to 15 points a game. Coming in tonight, they'd allowed, over the last four games, the fewest in the NFL in that four-game span. But then tonight, the Packers, there was some motion that Ernest Jones and others said after the game that the Seahawks weren't ready for motion out of different formations that got the linebacker's eyes tricked, as Jones explained, and a little bit of distraction. But just when McDonald thinks he can start adding to the plates of these defenders and add some more tricks, something like tonight happens, and he's going to have to reel it back in probably for Minnesota next week.
Greg Bell is with us in the wake of Sunday Night Football, covers the Seahawks for the Tacoma News Tribune. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I saw part of your recap from on the field, and you were talking about the Seahawks and how they measure up against the top competition in the NFL. Here we are through week 15. Where do you put the Seahawks?
Middling. I mean, they're 8-6. They've beaten the Cardinals twice. They beat the Jets to build this four-game winning streak. They beat the 49ers, who are a shell of their former selves, and the mess that they've become in San Francisco amid all the injuries. That's who they beat built the four-game winning streak on. They've lost to the Lions. They've lost to the Packers. They don't look ready for the NFC playoff-quality teams that they're going to have to beat. They lost to the Rams at home. If they're going to get to the playoffs, they're going to have to beat the Rams in Inglewood. The question, that's the final game of the regular season. The question now is, can they get there at least still tied in the standings? If they can't, they may not even win the division by beating the Rams. So they have beaten up on middling teams. They've beaten up on the AFC opponents they've played. But they have yet to prove that they can beat the upper-tier teams in their own conference, let alone the NFL. And here come the 11-2 Vikings coming in here on Sunday. Whew. Then they get Chicago the day after Christmas, Amy. You would think you can win that one. It would have been a coup to win both Green Bay and Minnesota back-to-back at home. They're not that good of a team. Now they're going to struggle to just split those games and hope that if they beat Chicago, that final game against the Rams, the regular season will mean something for the division. But if Geno Smith's knee is keeping him out of the Minnesota game, look out. This offensive line, the fact they can't establish a run, they can't protect the quarterback, really going to be a really tall task on Sunday against Minnesota.
As much as you're talking about the defense, that O-line has got to be a priority for them in the offseason, considering that it doesn't matter what kind of weapons you have, right? If you can't protect your QB and you can't find some room for your guys to run, they keep getting pushed around in the trenches.
Amy, I feel like I'm talking to you on one of those old cell phones that are the size of tennis shoes, because we've been talking about this for about 15 years in Seattle. Are we on a flip phone right now? Because we've been talking about this for 10-plus years in Seattle. Ever since they traded Max Unger for Jimmy Graham in 2015, this line has been terrible. They've had 10 centers in 10 years. They went to the 11th center in 10 years tonight. Jalen Sundell ended up finishing the game at center because Oluwatimi got hurt. Oluwatimi, a draft pick in 2023, the only reason he's playing center is because he didn't play well enough in the spring and summer that they had to go sign Connor Williams 8 months out of a knee reconstruction, the former Cowboy and Miami Dolphins starter. And Connor Williams retired after 7 games, just walked away from the game. And that's why Oluwatimi is starting. Now he's hurt. And Jalen Sundell is an undrafted rookie from North Dakota State. That's who their center was. He was next to a rookie right guard, a sixth-round pick, Satale Lamea, making his third consecutive NFL start. And they've had issues at right tackle because Abe Lucas just got back 4 games ago from having surgery way back in January on his knee. They've gone through fourth string right tackle this year. I know a lot of cities complain about their offensive line, but anyone who turns on a Seahawks game and sees how the quarterbacks just have to run for their lives all the time, it's pretty obvious where Seattle's problems begin on offense. It doesn't matter what the schemes are. It doesn't matter how good your quarterback is in accuracy. If he's getting bludgeoned almost on every snap, whether it's a completion, whether it's a bubble screen, whether no matter what it is, the quarterback is either pressured or hit. Tonight it caught up to Geno Smith and he hurt his knee on it.
As 7 official sacks, but as you point out, a dozen more QB hits by that Packers defense. So they were definitely swarming. Is it true? Did you hear the chants of go Pack go inside Lumen Field?
All night. All night. I thought I was on Holmgren Way. It grew as the night grew because the Packers had the big lead. A lot of foam cheeseheads in the lower deck. There's been a lot of talk out here in Seattle about how the Seahawks fans are not what they used to be in the Legion of Boom days. And because tickets are so expensive that the Amazon and the Google people and the Microsoft and Boeing people that have the money to buy those tickets are happy to sell them and recoup some of their high costs to out-of-town fans. It's been a common occurrence the last few years that the visiting teams, they load up in the lower deck of Seattle. This mystique of playing out here as a road opponent is long gone. And, yeah, the Packer fans travel everywhere across the NFL. But, yeah, the Go Pack Go chant started about pregame.
Oh, my gosh.
And they only grew louder after that.
Well, I suppose after seeing Romeo Doubs snag that touchdown off the turf, the ball that came lofting in, amazing. I mean, even if you're a Seahawks fan, that was one heck of an individual highlight.
Yeah, that was a great catch. And, again, I thought the Packers, they really did dominate the game. And 14-0 after the first quarter, it could have been 28. The total yards, Amy, after 13 minutes was 148-12. The first downs were 10-1 Green Bay. The offensive plays were 18-4 Packers. And I had to double take at the scoreboard to make sure it didn't say 24 or 28-0. It was only 14-0. And the Seahawks just aren't good enough to play that far behind that early. They're a middling team. And, I mean, the NFL has a big middle class.
It does.
Meeting middling class. And the Seahawks are squarely there. Their task now is the best chance to make the playoffs is to win a division. The best chance to win a division is to try to beat Minnesota at home on Sunday. That's what tonight is for them.
Before I let you go, Greg, I know the Rams, if they win out, they're the division champions. They've got Correct. That opportunity, right? And they are, I guess, currently sitting atop the West just because they haven't finished out all their divisional games. But how much do you think experience makes a difference when you're talking about a Rams team that's got some veterans from a Super Bowl winner, a coach that's been around for quite a while, even though he's still really young, versus a Seattle coaching staff that's kind of putting it all together and, yeah, a brand new regime there in Seattle?
No, it does matter. And McVay has had Seattle's number even when Pete Carroll was there with scheming and winning X's and O's, especially red zone. That's where Seattle has really struggled against the 49ers and the Rams in recent years is in the red zone, in the winning zone where the points happen, and suddenly setting for field goals instead of getting touchdowns, not converting on third downs in the close red zone. Those are the kind of things that have really haunted them against the Rams. The Rams' defense line has dominated Seattle in recent years. For all McVay does in offense, the defensive up front, the defensive dominance of the Rams' defensive line overwhelming that offensive line we just talked about, those of you have been the decisive factors. It was, again, when the Seahawks lost, fell behind, rallied, and then lost in overtime to the Rams on November 3rd. Geno Smith had an interception in the end zone in that game, just like he did tonight before he injured his knee. Sean McVay has known how to beat Seattle for many years now, and if it does come down for the NFC West, the Rams have to be feeling pretty good about it, having to beat the Seahawks at home.
Mm. Greg, because I like you and we're friends, I won't bring up Army-Navy game and ask you to talk about that.
I just flew back from Washington this morning. I was there.
Did you? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
I was there. It's like a mini class reunion for me. I see about 10 or 12 of my closest friends, and they came from the East Coast. And, we had a fabulous time. Unfortunately, Army didn't play nearly the games that's had all season. Navy has a good quarterback this year. That's kind of been how Army has beaten them in recent years. They've been far superior quarterback. But, yeah, it was a cool scene in Landover, the flyovers. And
awesome.
The best and the best of our country. And for those listening who've never been to an Army-Navy game, take it from a West Point grad who's been about 20 of them. You really should go. It's so different than just a regular college football game. For most of them, all the seniors, except by exception, it's the last game they'll ever play in their lives. You can really feel the passion in the stadium. I don't know if you've ever gone to one, Amy, but it's pretty unforgettable.
Been to West Point many times, but have never actually been to an Army-Navy game, and I hear they're legendary, so definitely on the bucket list. Thank you for a couple of quick seconds on that. I'm glad you were able to be there. Wow, though, what a weekend.
Oh, yeah. I got some miles. Yeah. Hey, running on fumes. That probably wasn't the best game story I've ever written in my life.
Well, I thought you looked like you had it all together in your post-game wrap-up there. You can find Greg online at G-Bell Seattle. Covers the Seahawks for the Tacoma News Tribune. Busy weekend, of course, but we appreciate a couple of minutes. Greg, Merry Christmas. Thank you so much.
Merry Christmas, Amy. Thank you. Take care of the horses. That looked like fun.
Oh, yeah, it was. It was cold, but it was fun.
Thanks,
Greg. Yeah, for Greg to have to fly, well, not to have to, but to fly into New York and go to the game at West Point on Saturday. Wowzers. I didn't realize he was there, so I'm glad I asked. But, man, what a weekend of football for Greg. So at A-Law Radio, if you're looking for the picture of the horses, it's there. That's what Greg's talking about. That's what I was doing on Saturday morning. It was cold, but it was awesome. And then also on our Facebook page, we're glad to have you with us, running a little bit late after that conversation, but we'll hear our update, and then we'll dive back into Week 15 in the NFL. Here's our latest sports update.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Chiefs under center this time with three tight ends, including Anthony Firkser, on the field, elevated before the game. Under center, a little short roll to the right. Mahomes looks back to the left, now turns back to the right. He'll step up, being chased, throws late in the back of the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City! Noah Gray finally finds his way free in the back of the end zone for a Chiefs touchdown. Worthy lines up in the backfield with Kareem Hunt. Again, Kareem playing in his hometown along with Kelce. First and 10 play. They swing it on the near flat with a screen. Worthy 15, 10, downfield block, touchdown! Kansas City on a swing screen to the near side to Xavier Worthy. And now the Kansas City Chiefs have their first three-possession lead of the season and maybe their first three-touchdown lead of the season.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Can you believe that's actually true? For the first time all year, the two-time defending Super Bowl champions led an opponent by three touchdowns. This one on the road in Cleveland, where the Chiefs do move to 13-1, but there is a much greater headline for the Chiefs. And that's the loss of Patrick Mahomes in the fourth quarter to an ankle injury. Now, what we've heard is it's a high ankle sprain. We don't yet have the complete synopsis or, I guess, the complete diagnosis, though they were hopeful that it wouldn't be nearly as bad as something that would keep him out for multiple games the rest of the way, anything like that. You know how tough Mahomes is when it comes to the ankles.
I was trying to run up in the pocket, obviously fourth down, trying to make a play happen. And as I threw the ball, I kind of got hit. I haven't seen it, but it felt like someone hit me from behind as well. And so I kind of just got rolled up on. It kind of happens in football. And so tried to bounce back up, but obviously it hurt a little bit. Now we'll just get after the rehab part of it and try to be ready for next week.
It's not broken. That's what I can tell. I mean, I just got off the field, so you know that, Sam. So I'm going to just see how it goes. I mean, it'll literally be day to day as we go forward. I don't know how much swelling he has or any of that, so or what will come, you know, from now till whenever.
wasn't a great game for the Chiefs offense, but it was a good start for the Chiefs offense. And while Mahomes' numbers aren't terrific, he does have two touchdown passes, including the one to Noah Gray that you hear there on the Chiefs radio network with Mitch Holtis. Xavier Worthy also taking a handoff and running a ball in. So the Patrick Mahomes injury will be the big question mark for the Chiefs this week. And we had just talked about them playing, is it three games in 10 days? I think three games in 11 days, something along those lines, which puts the onus on the training staff and maybe even on Mahomes to try to play hurt. But one thing that they were able to take from this game, six turnovers by the Cleveland Browns. Jameis Winston gets benched after multiple interceptions, and Kevin Stefanski was sick over it.
You cannot turn the ball over six times and expect to win any football game at any level. It's hard enough to turn over once versus a very good football team, so I'm extremely disappointed that we did that.
It's required for the quarterback to protect the football to get your team a chance to win. And the leadership decided that my time was up.
There's more, though, about the Chiefs, about the Browns cleaning up their offense.
Let's find a way to eliminate hurting ourselves, stabbing ourselves in the foot, whatever it may be, whether it's procedural, whether it's turnovers. As an offense, strong with the quarterback, we all have to play better.
My time is up, he said. I don't know. Maybe Jameis Winston isn't the quarterback for the Browns moving forward, though I know he's had some real impressive moments, too. Another note from this game, and it's more significant than just a loss. Nick Chubb, after coming back from the devastating knee injuries at the beginning of last season, suffered a broken foot. And so we'll wait to hear about him in this game, but that really stinks for the great running back. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
If you've ever wondered about the dark psychology behind history's most notorious murderers, Mind of a Serial Killer is the podcast for you. Find Mind of a Serial Killer on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.